What's going on, Tan and J-Man Show Nation? It's Monday nights. You know what that means. Another brand new episode of the Tan and J-Man Show, episode 506, to be exact. It's August. It's August 3rd, 2026. The longest month of the year, if you are counting Mondays. This is the first of five Mondays coming up in the month. So, and that's why we got planned out every Monday this month. A conference preview, or today we'll be previewing the group of six, they call it now, with the formation of the Pac-12 conference. It's now the group of six instead of group of five. The six conferences outside the big four power conferences. We'll be talking about teams that we think have a chance to make the college football playoff and a bunch of other stuff.
I'll be very honest with you. I completely neglected the Pac-12. Are they Pac-12 or Pac-10?
Pac-12.
They're Pac-12. Yeah, I completely neglected them. Didn't even think about them until you texted me, and it was too late at that point.
Well, and
didn't even think about it. So
I think there's definitely a couple teams in the Pac-12 that are going to make a good to make the playoff.
They're all you tonight, then.
That's all right. But we got MLB trade deadline to talk about. The Hall of Fame stuff's this weekend. I got my weekends confused last. I thought it was last weekend. It's this weekend. College sports, you can, as of right now, guys who played last year and gals who played last year can come back again.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
It is a mess. Football, I don't think it's going to be affected. It's way too late for that.
Right.
But basketball, for sure. As of now. Let us see where we're at in November. I don't even want to talk about it because, like, it's going to change by then. Yep. Something's going to happen. It's going to change the 5-for-5 thing. So now you see players that were out of eligibility are now committing to different schools in August, which that kind of hurts the teams that have their team set already. Good thing is it hurts the crappy team, or it helps the crappy teams, so it shouldn't help them too much. But anyway, I do have some birdie bogey for you tonight, and it is Hall of Fame game related. After I came up with this question, I realized we've probably had this on the show before.
And I probably don't remember it.
But I don't remember, but it sounds like something we would have had. Two teams are tied for the most appearances in the Hall of Fame game with seven. Can you name those two teams? Pretty straightforward question.
I cannot, but I'll try.
I think you have a pretty good shot. But you said that to me last week, and I guess I got a par last week. But
you did.
Anyway, Birdie or Bogey is brought to you by Giretti's Place, Small Town, and Arlington Public House. Small Town vibes, big time flavor. Giretti's Place serves up fresh breakfast and lunch favorites to keep you coming back for more. Located 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana. 46975.
The Arlington Public House over the weekend had a special appetizer, their eggplant plum app. It's breaded eggplant layered with garlic, roasted potatoes, roasted tomatoes, fresh plums, whipped ricotta cheese, finished with their house-made plum red pepper sauce.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think I've ever tried eggplant.
I know I haven't.
Yeah. I do not think so. A lot of people swear by it. Like, a lot of people get, like, eggplant parm, which I guess is obviously a substitute for chicken parm, but... It tastes so good, and I have a hard time sticking or going from something other than chicken parm.
And Dreddy's didn't have any specials listed on their Facebook page. So, but go check both restaurants out. You won't be disappointed. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. Go check them out.
Yes, sir.
But go ahead. You're going to say something?
I was going to ask you, what do you want to start with this week?
Well, we could save our group of six stuff for the end, but there is one college football thing I wanted to hit on real quick before I forget. Mm-hmm. And that was the interesting news today of Notre Dame's future scheduling.
Yeah.
So it was in the news for a while, you know, starting this year, Notre Dame-USC, that rivalry's going bye-bye. For a while, they were going to try to rework it out to get it back going again. Well, starting in 2030, they're getting it going again. Also in that news, the home-and-home series that has been scheduled for years before Indiana was the defending national champs between Indiana and Notre Dame is now canceled. And it's interesting because depending on which side you follow, you're hearing two different narratives.
I've heard that Indiana canceled it.
That's what the national narrative is.
National narrative is.
Zach Osterman, who is an Indiana beat writer, is saying that Indiana had to because USC, which I did read this part, USC was only playing Notre Dame on certain terms. One of those terms was early in the season.
Which makes sense.
Which makes total sense, especially with the Big Ten.
Yeah, yeah, especially with the Big Ten. I mean, and you probably aren't going to have Indiana is obviously not willing. I don't know if I would say they're not willing, but they see no gain in playing any good non-conference opponents.
You want me to list off their future non-conference opponents?
Let's do it.
So this year, North Texas, Howard, and Western Kentucky.
Pathetic.
2027, Kennesaw State, Indiana State, UMass.
Pathetic.
2028, Austin Peay, Eastern Michigan, Miami, Ohio.
Pathetic.
2029, Ball State, Eastern Illinois, Western Kentucky.
Pathetic.
2030, Indiana State and Delaware.
Pathetic.
And nothing on 2031, 2032 at UConn. That is the whole slate.
That's there's nothing to gain. Absolutely nothing to gain playing. You have everything to lose if you play big boys. So I don't blame them. It worked. Obviously, it's worked past 2 years for them. And this year, their first six games, if they're not 6-0, I'm going to kiss a rodent. I've used that before, but their first six games are pathetic. And again, who cares? They go and lose a game early, and that might put them out of the playoff for good.
Yeah.
It puts a lot more pressure on them to win out in the regular season, at least. But there's really no point right now until the rules change. There's no point to schedule any big boys,
which I've been a proponent. I want to see a rule in place, at least for the Power Four, that you have to play one Power Four team in your non-conference. The other games, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of teams do it anyway. I know Purdue has done it for years now. They've
played Power Four. Stupidly right now, but yeah.
Illinois is scheduled a Power Four. And again, a lot of the times they're on the same level that they are, but still it's Power Four opponent, home and homes.
Right.
But, Ohio State schedules big. Usually you see Alabama schedule big time, but again, they don't have nearly as much to gain in football as it does basketball in the non-con.
Most schools schedule one, at least, decent
usually,
team.
But yeah.
Indiana is just why everybody's making a big deal. They're the defending national champions. You don't usually see the other defending national champions, you know, but I mean, they're the second losingest college football program of all time.
Yeah.
And so when the schedules were made years ago, they were taking that consideration. Now, with their recent success, it probably doesn't look that great buying out games like Louisville when they did, or Virginia, which they're supposed to have a home and home with them, but is what it is.
Yeah. And I've seen a lot of SEC schools whine about it and their fans whine about it, but they get to play teams like Mercer in the middle of November. That should be just as illegal. That should be looked down upon just as bad.
Which I'm assuming that's going to change now that they're nine conference games. But I don't know.
It should. Maybe. I mean, I'd like to see every major conference go to nine conference games. I know it'd be hard for the smaller schools to really have a schedule. I mean, they'd have to play a lot of or get paid too, because a lot of those are big time buy games. You're paying, you know, a max school $1 million to come play in. They need that to survive, really. I'd like to see a 9-game Big Ten slate. It makes it more fun. I mean, they've gone in our lifetimes. I don't know where they started out at, but in
Big Ten's at 9 games.
Is it okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is at 9, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But in basketball, I know Big Ten, it started out as, I think it was 16 back in the day for a while, and then it went to 18 games, and now obviously with the West Coast, it went to 20. So more conference games, the better, in my opinion.
Did I see something where the Big Ten is going to be capped at 19 teams? So like if they were to expand at all, it's only going to be one more team. I thought I saw that this past week somewhere.
I didn't see that. Doesn't mean it's wrong. 19 is just weird. Having an odd number is strange
to
me. Maybe that's just
always figured 20 was the goal, but
yeah,
I thought I saw somewhere there was something about 19. But
they need to get rid of four teams at least. Go back to 14. Get rid of all the. Actually, go back to 12. Get Maryland Rutgers out of there too. I don't need them in there.
Yeah, you're just saying, yeah, kick out the.
Just kick them out. Just kick out.
Kick out every member after Nebraska.
Yeah. Kick out Nebraska and Penn State too. Let's go back to 10.
We've never seen. We remember that's 11. I don't.
Yeah, I do. I don't remember it as 10 at all. When did Penn State join? Late 90s.
Yeah, let me look that up. That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't remember it. I mean, it was 11. I mean, 12 makes sense as well, even though it's called the Big Ten. And Nebraska kind of fit in seamlessly as a Big Ten member because, you know, they're a plain state / Midwest.
They accepted the invite on June 4th, 1990, began competing in conference schedule starting 92-93 academic year.
Oh, it's been a lot.
So. Fully transitioning football 93.
Okay. So, I mean, we were obviously 1 year old.
Can you tell me who the before Penn State, who was the last addition to the Big Ten? It was back in 1949.
Last addition to the Big Ten was Wisconsin?
It's Michigan State.
Ah.
I should have held that in the holster for a
you should have
for your bogey.
You should have.
Oh well.
Yeah. I had a 10% chance to get it.
You did. You did. I wouldn't have got it. I would have guessed like Iowa or something for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who was the original member? Let's look that one up.
Original members of Big Ten.
Obviously, it's not just one school probably started it. It was probably a couple.
Seven schools in 1896. University of Chicago, who withdrew in 1946. That. University of Illinois. University of Michigan. University of Minnesota. Northwestern University. Purdue University and University of Wisconsin.
I would have thought maybe Northwestern was a later add.
Indiana and Iowa joined in 1899. Ohio State in 1912. Then Michigan State in, this was 1950, but the other said 1949.
Man, University of Chicago really screwed things up, didn't they?
Yes.
That was a rough one.
Yes, they did. So, but yeah, interesting.
That is interesting
stuff. Interesting stuff. But I do need to educate today, and I'm not talking about on this day yet. I'm talking about the MLB trade deadline because I am lost, and I need you to fill me in what's going on.
You know, it's been hot and heavy. The past couple of years, the trade deadline has stunk. It's been really quiet. But this year, it's been flurry after flurry after flurry. We saw some moves last week, not many huge ones, but obviously the big fish was Tariq Skubal going to, shocker, the LA Dodgers. And I mean, a lot of people are like, we're going to have a lockout for sure, which that is for sure going to happen. And, I've seen a lot of conspiracy theories as to why they traded him to the Dodgers. My favorite one being the owners are colluding, with each other in making the Dodgers the super team so they can lock them out and get a salary cap, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But other franchises could have popped in there and made a deal. The Brewers are one. I'm glad it didn't end up with the Brewers. But Brewers could have put together a trade package that was better than what the Dodgers did. A lot of teams could have, and they just didn't do it because I think the fear was we're going to give up a major – trade package for a guy that's going to be here 2 months, and then he's going to sign with the Dodgers anyway. So I think that was probably a lot of their thinking. But he goes to the Dodgers. The rich get richer. I've obviously followed it the whole time. I think I've actually really, really liked what the Cubs have done, which is very weird for me to say.
It's not on brand for you.
It's not on brand for me. I was earlier today about 2:30. There's about 2.5 hours left, and I was getting those Fire Jed tweets fired up. In fact, I was even thinking, like, what am I going to say if they don't do anything else? I was going to do breaking news. Jed Hoyer is a gigantic loser. That's what I was going to tweet. But he went out and made
in the drafts
some big boy deals. Kevin Gausman coming in. Traded for him last night. I think that's a fantastic deal. He's a rental guy, pitching a lot of very, very big baseball games, including the World Series last year. His ERA is around 4.3, but all of his underlying data suggests it should be about a run to a run and a half lower than that. And I think, again, pairing him with the best defense in baseball will really, really help. Today they traded for Clay Holmes and Tyrone Taylor from the Mets. Clay Holmes, another rental pitcher. Ton of ground balls. Again, he'll be helped by this. Cubs defense as well. He had a 2.34 ERA with the Mets before he got hurt. He's the guy back in April or May who took the line drive off the leg, ran to first base, and they ended up – he broke something in his leg. And I was thinking, you know, they would have had to helicopter me out of there if that happened to me. So he should be back. He was making rehab starts. He's made three of them so far. And hopefully he'll be up soon. And then Tyrone Taylor mashes left-handed pitching. They've struggled against lefties. Hopefully he'll start taking some at-bats away from Ian Happ against left-handed pitching. Then they trade for a reliever who strikes out close to 14 batters per nine innings, which is one of the higher rates in all of baseball. So I've very much liked what the Cubs have done. If I were to give it a letter grade, I'd go A-, B+.
All right.
So thrilled. Now just go out and win. They had an okay week, a 4-3 week where, you know, they won 3 of 4 in St. Louis, should have swept them. They're up 2-0 in the bottom of the 10th inning in game three and gave up 3 runs. So that stunk. And then over the weekend, it was kind of a frustrating one against the Yankees. They only gave up 6 runs all weekend and they end up losing 2 of 3.
Yeah, Yankees pitching showed up.
Yankees pitching was great, but Cubs should have won yesterday. They had many, many opportunities and just couldn't cash in. Saturday, Cubs just got shut down, which that happens. But felt like yesterday they should have won. But is what it is, and now they have the Dodgers coming to town. So it's not going to get any easier. But the rest of August, on paper, is kind of light. Is lighter, I should say, than it has been. But they've played pretty well during this tough stretch. So we'll see how they do. Elsewhere around baseball, I think there have been some surprise sellers as well as surprise buyers. The San Diego Padres are one that I'm very surprised were buyers, because I mean, I thought their closer Mason Miller was going to be the biggest fish to be traded, and they end up trading for Robbie Ray, trading for Casey Mize. So they kind of bolster their pitching staff, and maybe they're trying to get back in it a little bit. They're still in it, but not obviously not in the division race, but I thought the Phillies did really well today. They're trading for Luis Arraez to help their offense out. He'll slide in there at second base. It sounds like they're going to move Bryce Harper to the outfield. He has not played the outfield consistently in a couple years since he had Tommy John surgery, but that'll help their offense, their pitching staff as well. Trade for relievers Caleb Killian and Brooks Raley. That'll help them out. I thought the Pirates had an okay day. I thought they could have had a better day, but they did get arguably the best reliever who ended up getting traded, Luke Weaver from the New York Mets. So they did okay. Brewers kind of were surprisingly not all that active. They did make a couple trades for a back-end starter in Dustin May, a reliever or two. Two relievers, actually, but I thought they could have had a better day, especially, I mean, you have opportunity to win a World Series. Who knows what's going to come along, how often it's going to come along. The teams that had the worst days, I will say, Cincinnati Reds.
Nice thing.
They're out of it, essentially. I mean, they're only a few games back of the final wild card spot, and maybe they get hot.
Nah, they're out. Done. Put a fork in them.
They did nothing. They didn't make – I don't think they made a single trade at all. They kept literally everyone.
What is wrong with that city when it comes to managing teams?
Yeah. Yeah, our friend Andrew Eiler hates their owner, Nick Kroll. They held on to a bad rental starter, too, that they could have maybe gotten something for. But he's going to hang on, I guess. But they did nothing. Yankees – didn't do a whole lot. They traded for Luis Garcia last night, who I like that deal. Play first base a lot for him, I guess.
They traded for a reliever from the White Sox today.
White Sox, okay. It must not be a big-time reliever if the White Sox are trading him, since they're currently winning.
White Sox made a big move.
Division. Yeah, they made a pretty big move yesterday. Luis or Jose? Mm-hmm. Luis Castillo from the Mariners. They didn't give up a whole lot for him, but they needed some pitching help. But other than that, the White Sox didn't do a ton, I would say, which again, they're kind of in a wait and see mode, as far as they don't want to not wait and see, but like, obviously they're trying to win the division this year, but, obviously don't want to, ruin their future, going forward since the farm system's so good.
Did you talk about the Yankees landing, Ramos from the Giants?
I did not.
That was an hour ago.
Yeah, outfielder. He's mediocre at best and probably just kind of a holdover. They need right-handed hitting. He's a holdover really until Judge and Stanton if they do come back. And Bellinger. Bellinger's out too. I don't think he'll play a whole lot once those guys come back. I thought the Cleveland Guardians did very well today, trading for Foster Griffin, who spent some years in Japan or the KBO in Korea. I can't remember which, but he comes back over to the U.S. and he had a great year. He was in Nationals. He made the All-Star team. So Guardians made that move there. And I'm sure there's countless others that I am completely blanking on. But overall, it's been a very, very eventful day in baseball, and they needed it because last couple of years have kind of been kind of stunk a little bit.
I'm trying to find who the White Sox traded, but they made some trades, some other
they
trades.
Made a couple trades. Yeah, I don't think they'd trade anyone off the major league roster.
They got Britton Doyle from the Rockies. They got Joey Bart from the Braves.
But they did need catching help. I was texting with our friend Aaron Lynch the during the day today, and he's like, we need catching help. Need Drew Romo off the team. So they got some catching help. I don't know if it's going to bolster their team too much, but elsewhere around the league, as far as how the teams are going, the Boston Red Sox are still like mind-numbingly hot right now. It's crazy. They're now 9 games over .500. They have won 28 of their last 33 games. Probably the biggest deal that happened today was they traded for Baltimore Royals catcher Adley Rutschman, and they gave up a haul for him too, including a top 50 prospect. It's
probably the only way the Orioles would trade him in division.
Yeah, especially in division. So that helps Boston out completely. Again, I don't know how real it is, but because they are in this hot streak and it's going to turn eventually. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe they just get. Maybe they just start rolling.
I remember when we were talking about them being the tank of the AL East.
Yeah, I thought for sure. And crazy thing is, they're doing it without their best pitcher, Garrett Crochet. They're doing it without their young stud, Roman Anthony, who was my sneaky MVP pick to start the year. And I don't think he's played since middle of April. So sorry. Sorry, Roman. Yeah, they're good. Yankees are only 2.5 back of the Rays. White Sox have a 3-game lead on Cleveland. Minnesota was another team I wanted to hit on. They ended up buying, which
you said last week, sell for
yes,
them.
Yes, they should sell. They're 1 game under .500, but 4 games out of the division. New ownership. Sounded like they were just going to tear it down to the studs, and they bought. That's very surprising for me to hear. Houston Astros are hot. A few weeks ago when we did buy or sell, you bought them because they've been good in the past.
It's annoying.
Here they are, 2.5 games up now. Texas Rangers went from buy to, oh my gosh, I think we're going to sell today. I don't think they ended up really doing a whole lot of selling, but it looks like they're going to be done. I mean, there's a lot of season left still. 2 months left. Rangers are 2.5 out. Mariners are 3 out. So they can still make a run. But Oakland Athletics, I did it. the Athletics, they're 22 games under .500 and did nothing. They didn't buy anyone for the
future. They're ready to just get next year here, get in their new home.
Yeah, they stink. Marlins were sellers at the deadline. They're only 1.5 games back of the Phillies.
What they do.
Marlins are only 1.5 games out of a playoff spot right now. So Padres are only 1 game out. That's why they bought. So, yeah, Cubs are 6.5 behind the Milwaukee Brewers. They are 5 up in a playoff spot, so they're sitting okay right now. Pittsburgh Pirates are 1 game under .500. They're tied with Cardinals are only 1/2 game behind them. Cardinals were clear sellers, though, and Pirates are buyers. So
when's the last time you could say that?
A long time. So we'll see what happens the rest of the year. Arizona Diamondbacks are tied with the Phillies for that second spot in the wild card. Of course, the Phillies are then, I think, Diamondbacks have the tiebreaker, so the Phillies would be the third wild card slot. But again, a lot of season left, 2 months, and now I think we'll start to see teams separate themselves a little bit.
Yep, it's go time now.
It is, yeah, there's no waiting around. I saw the Cubs DFA Jameson Taillon last week, and I saw some talking heads, mainly A.J. Pierzynski. He's had too many concussions behind the plate. Said, I can't believe the Cubs got rid of Jameson Taillon. They need the innings. And I'm sitting here thinking, you have 2 months left. You don't need innings. You need outs, man. This is the time. you don't need bad innings, especially with the trade deadline. You know, it's just a week away at that point. You need to get as many outs, shrink the game as much as possible. Jameson, Cubs did trade Jameson Taillon to the Blue Jays yesterday. So he's actually in line. He could start Thursday against the Cubs, which would be kind
of interesting.
Interesting in a makeup game. And Kevin Gausman would be on normal rest too. So it could be two players that are facing their former team in their first game away from them. So we'll see what happens. But trade deadline was very fun. It's, I would say, the most active trade deadline out of any of the three major sports. It's hard to really make too many deals in the NFL season because it's such a short season, yeah, and you have to learn a whole lot more. Where baseball, you can pretty much just come in and play. Basketball, you can pretty much come and play too, but there's a little more nuance to it. But baseball, just come in, swing the bat, pitch, you'll be all right.
Yep. Yep, and just hope if you're a team that has promotions, hope that you don't trade away a player. They have, yeah, a promotion coming up, kind of like the Mets did.
Yeah, the Cubs actually did it too. They South Bend Cubs did. Mm. They have a Moises Ballesteros bobblehead day coming up, and they traded him for a reliever today. So
probably too late for too late for a remake. So
yeah, definitely
collector's item now.
Definitely
worth something.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yep. Any other thoughts around the MLB?
No. I'm hoping the Cubs can win one. They do. They missed Skuball when they faced the Tigers 2 weeks ago, and now they have to face them tomorrow. They have to face them tomorrow. So this will be the J-Man's Book of Prediction of the Week. Skuball loses his Dodger debut.
You can look at that.
Yeah. J-Man's Book of Prediction of the Week brought to you by Travis Watchering Insurance Agency for life, home, auto, business, renters, workers, comp, and farm insurance. Contact us 219-869-4561. Book it.
Just like you've done that time or two.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got it down pat.
Yeah, you do. Same cadence and everything. It's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. But you want to get educated?
I do. Do you want to get educated? Because I actually have pulled up.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah, go for it. Because I was about to pull it up. So yeah.
On this day in 1852, America's first intercollegiate sporting event takes place when the Harvard heavyweight rowing crew beats Yale by 2 lengths over 2 miles on Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire.
I was going to guess it was Rutgers and somebody. So
yeah. On this day in 1906, Washington Nationals, I don't know if they were the Nationals back then, they might have been, Tom Hughes becomes the first MLB pitcher to win 1-0 extra inning game with his own home run in the 10th inning.
Nice. That away, Tommy.
Pretty good. 1909, MLB umpire Tim Hurst instigates a riot by spitting in the face of Athletics second baseman Eddie Collins, who questioned a call. Hurst was banned for life.
Yeah, I would hope so. Can you imagine if that happened nowadays?
The
umpire would get beat up so
bad.
Oh,
yeah. Twitter would be a buzz. 1921, Major League Baseball Commissioner Kenesaw Landis handed out lifetime bans to 8 Chicago White Sox players accused in the Black Sox scandal despite their acquittal. By a
8
Chicago
men out.
Jersey. They were acquitted. I didn't even realize that. On this day in 1930, this is kind of an interesting one. For the second separate time in the same season, Philadelphia's outfielder Chuck Klein hit safely in 26 straight games.
That's
26 game hit streak.
Chuck can rake.
Yeah, he can. Good old Chuckster.
I wonder where he hit in the lineup.
He's a right fielder, so back then, depending on your position, you probably hit third if you're a right fielder. On this day in 1933, the New York Yankees were shut out for the first time in 308 games.
That definitely, that's they don't crazy. Even get to like 10 games anymore.
I know. Yeah. 308 is a long time. Yeah. That's 2 full seasons, pretty much close to it. Let's see here. On this day in, we're in the 40s now. There's some Olympics. 1948, Negro Leagues veteran pitcher Satchel Paige, who was aged 42, made his first start.
42. Yep. Still time, Josh. Still time for it.
Yeah. 1949, the Basketball Association of America in the NBL merged to form the NBA. It was the BAA and the NBL, and they formed the NBA. 1949.
NBA sounds better.
Sounds a lot better than both of those. On this day in 1958, Baltimore Orioles manager Paul Richards is ejected from both games of a doubleheader.
I figured if you get ejected from one, he couldn't manage the second one.
It's a separate game.
Interesting. So yeah, okay.
Must have been pretty bad.
He didn't want to go to work that day.
Clearly. Oh, I've never heard this before. This is kind of interesting. 1960, for the only time in Major League Baseball history, teams trade managers. As Detroit traded Jimmy Dykes, who was 44-52, to Cleveland for Joe Gordon, who was 49-46.
That's weird.
Yeah, I'd never heard that before. On this day in 1979, Sam Snead at 67 set the record for oldest player to make the cut in a major.
One of the greats.
67, that's old.
Yeah, that's impressive, especially in a major where the best of the best are playing.
Exactly, yeah. Let's see if we have any more here that are worthy of being said. Because it's been a pretty good on this day. At least there's been a lot of them. On this day in the 90s now.
What a great decade.
Yeah. 98, 99, 2000. 2004, St. Louis Cardinals first baseman Albert Pujols became the first player in Major League Baseball history to hit at least 30 homers in each of his first four seasons.
So he was the first baseman by then, because I remember his rookie year, he was third.
Yeah, he played some third. He also played some right and left field, too. But yeah, he must have just been full-time. 2006, Barry Bonds hit his, 2006, Barry Bonds' 715th home run ball, which, moving past Babe Ruth into second place, fetched $220,000 at an auction.
That's it?
Yeah, I know. I thought it'd be more than that. Hmm. We have some senior open. I think that's going to do it this week.
Pretty good list. Yeah, pretty good list bad. For On This Day on August 3rd. And the On This Day segment is brought to you by every week by Blue River Digital. Blue River Digital is a full-service smart marketing agency. They help businesses simplify marketing and grow with intention. Their focus is on systems, strategy, and long-term results, not hype or one-off tactics. They offer digital marketing, website development, graphic design, printing and direct mail, signage and vehicle graphics, corporate apparel, promotional items, and AI and automations. They work with small, medium, and large businesses spanning across the United States with a strong presence in Northern Indiana. Contact them today at 260-248-2749. See how they can help you and your business with your digital marketing.
Sir.
Any thoughts around the NFL Hall of Fame inductions going on this weekend? The Hall of Fame game Thursday, you're right.
No.
Thursday between the Cardinals and the Panthers.
No thoughts on it. I don't know if I've watched a Hall of Fame game in 10 years. I just think it's boring, and
it's very boring.
The teams stink this year too that are in
it.
I couldn't even tell you. You talked about last week who's going to the Hall of Fame. I know Drew Brees is one, right?
Drew Brees, Larry Fitzgerald, Luke Kuechly, Adam Vinatieri, and then there's a member of the senior committee, like Roger Craig or something like that.
Yes, it was Roger Craig. Yeah,
those are the five.
Yeah, no thoughts. All those guys deserving to get in for sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a weak class, because sometimes guys get in and you're like, really, that guy got in?
Right.
Yeah,
Drew Brees is getting inducted by Sean Payton, which is interesting. Oh. So I don't think that was announced last week when we were doing the pod, but Sean will be missing the Broncos practice on Saturday to go to Canton and do that. So.
I'm surprised he's willing to do that. He's such an arrogant fella.
Yeah, it's been interesting so far, even though training camp's very early. He's been pretty nice to the media. I'm like, what is going on? Maybe giving up play calling to Davis Webb's.
Yeah,
he
less
needed
stress.
To become, yeah. become kind of nice. But
that's weird, though, because it seems like he'd want like total control, and it'd be really hard for him to give up play. I'm sure it was very hard to give up play calling. But
I'm guessing that was the only way they could keep Davis Webb at least for another year. So.
Right. We'll see how long that lasts. If he gets fed up, if things go poorly, what'll happen. But
Yep. So, but though, like you said, I don't know much about Roger Craig, but the other four, deservingly so. I know there's some naysayers out there that have their grudges against kickers and punters and whatnot.
Sure.
But
he hit the most clutch field goals in the history of the NFL. It's hard to
keep two
like
different
that
teams. Yeah. He was nails.
Yeah. Keekly for sure deserves to be in. Larry Fitz, 100%. Breeze, obviously. No doubter.
It's interesting, all those guys, you know, Vinatieri played for two teams, Breeze two teams, Fitzgerald one team, Keekly one team.
Yeah.
I don't know about Roger Craig.
He was the 49ers running back during those Super Bowl years. Pretty sure it's 49ers. But
And Keekly retired in his prime.
Yeah. He did. I mean, we've seen that a couple times.
Calvin.
Barry Sanders was kind of the first that I remember.
Yeah.
But Calvin, yeah. Didn't Patrick Willis retire real early too? Or was I wrong on that one? Maybe he's maybe he got hurt.
Yeah.
Thinking, but
yeah. So yeah, I'm actually probably gonna tune in. I want to hear Drew's speech and everything. I know there's a lot of Drew fans planning to go to Canton. I've never been. Yeah. You ever been?
I have
to the Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I have. I was 13 or 14. Kind of lame. Maybe that's just me. I like the baseball one way more. Sure. I thought it was way more interactive. And obviously there's a lot more history when it comes to baseball because it's much older.
Right.
But I was kind of disappointed with the NFL one.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought the college one was even better.
I want to go sometime, but I think it's like a 4-hour drive from Fort Wayne. So
yeah.
You have to really map it out and plan it out.
I would like to go again, though, because, again, I was probably too young to really appreciate it as well. So
didn't appreciate a lot of things 13, 14 years old.
No, I appreciate the chicken whopper from Burger King. It was about my thing that I was into those days.
Oh, that's classic. But we're going to be talking about the group of six. I can't get used to saying that because it's been the group of five for years.
Yeah.
Conferences. So we're talking American Conference, Conference USA, the Mid-American Conference, MAC, Mountain West, Pac-12, and the Sun Belt. And that leads me to my blind rankings for you. We got a list of six this week, Josh, not five. I'm throwing you off a little bit.
All right.
So I, off the top of my head, tried to come up with a list of, I think, six of the better players to ever come out of schools from the group of six, and I came up with one player in each conference. That's how I kind of did it. So, and we will start with the Sun Belt. Mm. This guy played at Troy, DeMarcus Ware.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I was coming. How am I doing this? Am I doing like college career or am I doing,
you can do it however you want. I was thinking you'd probably lean on pro career, but you can do whatever you want.
Of course, we don't really remember a lot of these guys in college where they played. I mean, I got to put DeMarcus Ware one. He's a Hall of Famer. It's hard to really say, anyone's going to be better, although there could be somebody on that list, but I'm going, there's obviously someone on the list. Shoot. I'm going to go, I have to stick with one. That's why I said originally. That's great. Good job, Josh.
There's a couple on this list that are pretty heavy hitters, but that's okay.
Oh, man.
Well, we'll go to the American.
Jerry Rice is probably out there too. No, he was not.
He's Division II.
He's Division II, so,
we'll go to the American Conference, East Carolina. Any guesses?
East Carolina. All I can think of is Skip Holtz. That's all the guy. That's the only person I can think of.
How about Chris Johnson?
Oh, man. Forgot about him.
Who unfortunately has ALS right
now.
I don't know.
Heck of an NFL career. It was also short lived, which say that a lot about running backs.
CJ2K.
2,000 yard season. Obviously great at East Carolina. I'm gonna slot him in the five slot.
Five. All right. Yeah. One and five taken. All right, we'll go to the what conference are they in? The Mountain West. I want to make sure they're still there. With New Mexico.
Let's see who played it. Oh, Brian Urlacher.
Brian Urlacher.
Oh man. I would take DeMarcus Ware's career over Brian Urlacher.
That's fair. So Super Bowl champ.
Put Urlacher three.
Three.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go with the into the MAC. Let's go to Miami, Ohio.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Big
Ben. That was gonna come. Gotta go two. He's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. Won a Super Bowl, put up huge numbers. I'm still okay with DeMarcus Ware being above him, though.
Let's go to the Pac-12.
This is going to sting.
Let's go to San Diego State.
Okay, Marshall Faulk.
Marshall Faulk.
I'm going to put him four. I'll re-rank him afterwards, but obviously, heck of a career for
Marshall. So you have six left?
I have the six spot. This is going to hurt. I can already tell by your face.
Let's go to the Conference USA.
Uh-huh.
Let's go to Southern Miss.
So Brett Favre?
Brett Favre.
I got to put him six. that does sting. If
we're, I could have went Louisiana Tech with Terry Bradshaw.
Could have. That would have been an easy six.
Yes.
If you're ranking one through six based on how terrible of a human they are, and number one is the worst human possible, I would have put Brett Favre.
That's fair. One. That's fair.
But I got to put him six.
Big Ben number two.
Big Ben, yes, Big Ben number two. The rest of those guys, I don't think had any off-field stuff.
Urlacher, it wasn't really? Against the law, but he had some. He cheated on his wife with Paris Hilton.
He's kind of a
so.
Kind of, well, yeah. I have to see his ugly mug on billboards around here because he does hair. The hair plant thing. re-ranking those fellas, I'm gonna go Marshall Faulk one.
Ooh, all right.
I'm gonna put. Probably Favre two, Ware three. I already forget who else was on the
Big
list.
Ben, Chris Johnson, Urlacher.
Big Ben four, Urlacher five, Chris Johnson six.
I think that's a pretty fair ranking.
Yeah, that was a good list. I like that.
Yeah.
Fun.
I think I'd put Favre over Faulk though.
Yeah, close stuff. Faulk was kind of like before his time though, where he caught the ball.
Right.
He had 1,000 yards receiving, stuff like that before, you know, not a lot of running backs do it, but we've seen more recently. But
they both have one Super Bowl each. Favre was one MVP like 3 years in a row.
Yeah, he put up some huge numbers. That's just his career ended so poorly. And the thing that sticks out in my brain a lot with Favre is that pick he threw against the Saints, where
all across his body,
run the ball, or he'd throw it away and they'd have a chance to make a field goal.
I remember the following year, which ended up being his last year. Mm-hmm. It's when the Vikings were playing at the University of Minnesota because they were getting their stadium built. So, and they were playing late in December against the Bears on national television, and the field was just frozen. He got sacked one time or hit after. I thought he died. Yeah, he was just laying there. I thought he was dead.
Yeah, he's a scumbag. And
yeah, he is.
I wish I could. Well, I'm glad I put him six, even though.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, another one I could have went with in the conference, you say, I could have went with Marshall, Randy Faulk, or Randy Moss. Randy Moss,
yeah, that would have been a tough one. I might have had to put him. If you were replacing those two guys, Favre for Moss, I would have probably put Moss in a re-rank. I'd have a hard time not putting him one, but
yeah.
I might have put him two.
Yeah. So, but that is the blind ranking segment, which is brought to you by, like it is every week, Performer Print 2 Promo Group. Performer Print 2 Performer Print 2 Promo Group has over 50 years combined experience in promotional products and commercial print. They strive for fast and efficient response to all your print needs, so you need to look no further. So if you're looking for a trustworthy, dependable resource for your next trade show, company picnic, or sales meeting in 2026 or 2027, let them be your one-source print and promotional company today by giving Barbara Van Weinsberg a call, 574-210-3815.
Sir.
Yep, I love that we're in August because college football starts this month. And also NFL, I mean, we're 7 weeks from today is the first Monday night game. So,
is it
real? No, 6 weeks. 6 weeks from today. Yeah.
Crazy.
So we're getting there. And college football playoff, it's 12 teams. Expanded to 12 teams 2 years ago. And in part of that, there's one non-Power 4 school, like we said, now in the group of six, that has to make it. So now that's what we're going to talk about today, some teams we think might have a chance.
I have four teams here. How many do you have down?
I wrote down a couple in each conference. I think that
a lot more work than I did. But I only did four total.
That's fair.
But the first team I think is Tulane. They went last year, right?
And then yeah, I do. What? I do not have them written.
Yeah. Out. So they lost their coach to Florida, John Summerall. They got a Will Hall is their new coach, who was coach at Southern Miss a few years ago. Have a quarterback coming in, transfer from Ball State, threw 25 touchdowns in 2024. I just think they'll just reload again, and Tulane's turned into a fairly good football program.
Yeah, and that's in the American Conference. Mm-hmm. In the American, I have Navy as the main team. They went 11-2 last year. I looked at their schedule. Of course, their big game's Notre Dame, but as long as they don't lose by 40, and if they can take care of business, everybody else, I think they got a good debate to get in.
It would be interesting to see them in with the triple option against some big time opponents. They don't play them except Notre Dame,
right?
So it'd be hard to prepare for.
I think Army's another one you can make a case for. Jeff Monken's been there for a long time. I'm looking up their schedule because I do think they do play somebody early on. Or I could be wrong, though. Let's see here. No, they don't. Most of their games are conference games. So they play Air Force, of course. That's in November. They don't play like a heavy hitter. So they're one to watch out for. East Carolina, they do play at Alabama week one.
Oh, boy.
That's not going to go well. And then they play Appalachian State week two. But after that, a pretty favorable schedule. And then USF is another one. This is just an American that I think have a chance. They don't play any big boys whatsoever. They play FIU at Army, then Delaware State, then at Bowling Green, and then get into their Kent State, and then they get into their conference games. They usually will play like Florida or Miami or Florida State, I thought, but not this year.
Who are you talking about? I missed it.
USF.
USF. South Florida?
Yeah.
They are on my list. They did lose Alex Golesh to Auburn, former Tim Beckman assistant at Illinois. Who then went to Tennessee and then went to South Florida. They did beat Florida last year, remember, on a last-second field goal.
Yes, that's right.
But their new coach is Dolphins legend, Brian Hartline. 17 of 22 projected starters are transferred, including quarterback Michael Van Buren from LSU. I mean, you would think Hartline would have deep relationships. I don't know about the pockets there in South Florida, but especially with his time at Ohio State, you would think he'd be able to recruit pretty well.
In the American Conference, does have a conference championship game. So I'm predicting Navy against USF in that game.
Okay.
Conference USA, the one team I got circled is Liberty.
Is East Carolina in Conference USA?
American.
American.
I went over them too. So
I'm sorry. I was distracted. It's okay. My dog was scratching at the door.
It's all good.
But anyway, East Carolina, I have them on my list. 9-4 last year.
You like the American Conference. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, they did lose a quarterback to Illinois. His name is escaping me right now. But new quarterback Mitch Griffiths from Texas Tech, who played a good amount of ball for him last year.
Yeah, you dove into the rosters a lot deeper than I did. I've really dove into the schedules, trying to figure out who doesn't play, like, a big boy and who does. Like looking at Liberty, they play at James Madison week one.
Yeah, you're good.
But other than that, their biggest opponent might be, besides their conference, is probably Ball State. So they don't have, I don't think, too many chances to lose. Jamie Chadwell does a great job there, has done a great job there. Hugh Freeze before him, that scumbag. But
still scumbag.
But you know, you look at it in a lot of conference games, a lot of cupcakes. That's good for wins. But is that enough to get you into college football playoff when you have to go against all these other group of six teams and you're comparing resumes? So,
I mean, the thing they have going for, well, a lot of group of six do schedule big time opponents, just because they need to in order to get paid. But a lot of them lose. But if you win, you're in a very good spot. I think the committee looks a lot at 12-0, 13-0 too, though, if they were on the table. So, but that gives you a very thin margin for error should you lose a game. Because if you're 12-1 and your losses to, I don't know, some horrible team in your conference, then
you're poorly on you. Yeah, a few other Conference USA teams to watch out for: Jacksonville State, Kennesaw State, and Western Kentucky. except looking at West Kentucky's schedule. Their first 3 weeks are all on the road, at Nevada, at Georgia, and at Indiana.
Yeah, it's not going to happen for them.
No, no, they're probably not even going to get out of that healthy. So
Yeah.
And then they go to Liberty second last week to the season. So that's not happening.
Yeah.
They might be Nevada. I don't know what Nevada's got.
Maybe. But, yeah, I don't either.
But, I think Liberty wins the conference USA. And the MAC, I honestly don't see any MAC teams doing it because they all play a Big Ten team or two. But I think Western Michigan has the best chance.
And, I mean, it seems like every year we'll see, like, you have five teams that are 8-4, 7-5, 6-6, something like that. And you just, it's hard to really get, especially you have Maction on a Tuesday night. You're playing at cold Toledo where it's snowing and you lose 6-3. Stuff like that happens all the time in the MAC. And you just rarely see teams from the MAC run the table or go 11-1 even.
Like Western Michigan, even though they're probably the favorite to win the MAC, week one, they go to the Big House at night. And then week four, I can't believe they're actually hosting this team. They're hosting Boise State.
Oh, good for them. I like that.
I mean, if they were to split those, then run the table, probably gets you in.
Yeah.
But
you have to split them, though.
But how are you going to
get not through winning the rest of them?
One team I do like their schedule in the MAC is Miami, Ohio. They do play two Power Four teams in their non-conference. It's at Pitt week one in Cincinnati. It says versus Cincinnati. It's a neutral game at the Bengals Stadium week three. Right. But, like, once again, if you could split those somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to play Ohio State or anybody like that. Let's look at Toledo's schedule. They're always a popular one. They travel to East Lansing for a Friday night game week one.
They always start on a Friday night in East Lansing, it seems like.
They host San Diego State week four, which they're supposed to be pretty good this year. All other games are in conference. It's weird to see Sacramento State part of the MAC.
That is weird.
It's very weird.
They haven't been. Have they even been like FBS? Or is this their first year?
I think this is their first year.
They're in the MAC?
Yeah.
What you said?
Yeah.
It's weird. Well, Northern Illinois is in the Mountain West, aren't they?
Yeah.
Burn it down, start over.
Yep. Yeah, and then Ohio is the other one I wanted to look at in the MAC, see what their schedule looks like. At Nebraska, week one.
Man, I hope they get them. I really hope they get them.
They play a team I've never heard of week four. The Stonehill Skyhawks.
Oh, you never heard of Stonehill, man?
I have not.
They're D1 basketball, I want to say.
Probably. There's like 300 some that are in basketball.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but so I will pick Western Michigan to win the MAC, but I don't think they make the CFP. The Mountain West, hard not to look at a team that went 10-4 last year in UNLV with Dan Mullen.
Yeah, they're on my list. Dan Mullen's there. He's a good football coach. I think got a raw deal at Florida. They got fired him way too soon.
Yes, they did.
Transfer quarterback Jackson Arnold, who started games at both Oklahoma and Auburn, is there. So he should put up some big numbers out there in the Mountain West.
Yeah, UNLV was like the worst program 5 years ago. And then Barry Odom had two really good years. Now Mullins had a good. That's 3 years in a row. They've been really good.
Yeah, UNLV was horrible football.
And looking at their schedule, they do host Memphis in Allegiant Stadium Saturday, August 29th. Then they got some conference games, and then they do host also. They play their home games at Allegiant Stadium. I'm an idiot. They host Cal Golden Bears in. Early October, so that'll be a big one to watch out for.
They play in the same place that the Raiders do?
Yeah. Is that what you said? Yep.
That's weird.
Yep. It looks like every single home game this year there.
For them.
Other teams to watch out for the Mountain West, New Mexico. They went 9-4 last year. Checking out their schedule. They do go to Oklahoma week three.
Lose one of those, it's not going to hurt.
Right.
You
right. Hawaii is one that's supposed to be good for first time in a while. They go to Stanford week one. I'd like to think they got a chance there. Stanford's terrible.
They're real bad.
That's their biggest. Oh, they do go to Arizona State in middle of October. And let's see. And I wanted to look up North Dakota State, who is part of the Mountain West now.
Good. I want to see how they do in an actual.
Yeah, they don't have any like big boys that they play. That's right. Yeah. So, but I'll go with UNLV to win the Mountain West. Pac-12. I like San Diego State.
I do too. I mean, I've always thought San Diego State fit in well with the Pac-12 anyway, even when they were in the, you know, whatever conference they were. Were they in the Mountain West? They were in the Mountain West. They've had a good football program for a while. And I think they're probably, I forgot completely about the Pac-12. Didn't even think of them as being a group of five or six or whatever it is now. But I like San Diego State ultimately to be the team that does make it. That's a non-power four.
Okay. They travel to UCLA week two. It's kind of chalk, maybe. Some of our listeners probably think this pick's chalk, but I'm going with Boise State to be the team again to represent. They go to Oregon week one, but after that, I could see them running the table.
They were good last year.
Yeah.
Or what was it, last year or 2 years ago?
They went 9-5 last year. Two years ago, they got in and lost to Penn State.
That's right. That's awesome. With their running back. That's with
Ginty.
Ginty.
Also, look out for Fresno State and Washington State to be contenders in the Pac-12 as well. The Sun Belt, hard not to like JMU, even though they're on another brand new coach.
Yeah, their coach leaves and goes to UCLA. I think he'll do a good job there. But James Madison, man, old Sig's got them going.
Sure did. Had them going for a while.
Yeah.
Looking at their schedule, no big boys at UConn, but they're not big boy. So
they're better than they've been in a long time, though. Jim Moore Jr. did it. Jim Moore Jr. left.
He's at Colorado State now.
Colorado State, that's right.
Yeah, he has a whole new roster out there.
I don't blame him.
They lost like everybody. So,
but the fact that he turned UConn from the worst program in college football to I think they made a bowl last year.
I think you're right.
How much better they were. So,
and other Sun Belt teams that could contend: Arkansas State, Old Dominion, and Troy. Mm-hmm. But overall, I like Boise State. If not Boise State, I think UNLV or Navy. Those are kind of three I got my eye on.
I'd love for Navy to get in. That'd be fun. No. I don't think it matters who gets in because they're going to get beat early, if probably the first game, but. Especially if once it does expand to more teams, I think maybe we'll see some more upsets.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. But at least it gives the casual college football fan a reason to kind of watch some of these conferences because somebody's got to make it.
Yeah.
Especially if like Boise State struggles, then it'll be fun because it's like, oh, some new blood. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year we saw JMU and Tulane both make it.
Yeah,
I don't see two of them making it ever again.
No, I think that was just special circumstances. Yeah. But never again. And especially after the way it went, now it's probably okay. They can only let one in.
But good to get one preview down. Next week we'll be back with the Big 12.
Big 12 preview. Next week. Okay. Yep. All right. Birdie Bogey is there are two franchises that have played that are tied for the most appearances in the Hall of Fame game with seven. Can you name those two?
Well, I'm going to go with two franchises that are historic, that have a lot of Hall of Famers in it, because usually you know the Hall of Fame game is around two teams that have representation. I'm going with the Cowboys and Steelers.
You nailed it. I thought you might get it this week.
I thought the other team was the Niners, so I was
Cowboys. Yeah, you nailed it. Especially those teams have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but you have a commanding 4-stroke lead in Birdie Bogey this
year. Oh, there's time for me to fall on my face and choke.
I got to start not getting pars. Pars can't be my best. I got to start getting some birdies. But thanks for watching the Tan and J-Man Show. We'll be back at it with another episode next Monday. Have a fantastic week, everybody.